Okay, so thank you for joining this Saturday evening. Okay, guys.
Hardik, you go sit there, sit.
We'll start with invocation prayers. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prishthaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamiti Namine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Deshatarine Namo Mahavidanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namne Gaurakshe Namaha Panchatattvatmakam Krishnam Bhaktarupa Swarupakam Bhaktavataram Bhaktakhyam Namami Bhaktashaktikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare
Can you give me one copy of Bhagavad Gita? Or? Oh, that's okay, but I can use from here.
Now, if you talk, I need to talk to me, then you need time. No problem. Only focus on the problems. Ask questions.
Okay, so what did we discuss last time? Okay, now guys, you have to be very quiet. Please. Okay? So, what did we discuss last time? Which shlokas?
14. 14.
So we discussed chapter 2, text 13 and text 14. So we'll continue from there. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So last time we discussed text 13 and text 14. So text 14 was Matra Sparshastu Kaunteya Shitoshna Sukha Dukhada Agma Paino Nitya Stam Titiksha Swabharata. So in that shloka we were discussing the one should try to tolerate the various dualities of life. So Krishna here is giving the example as there is summer and winter season which come and go. So same way happiness and distress, they are also temporary, like this changing season. So they come and go. So one should not be caught up by these various dualities. One should try to do one's duty, irrespective of all these duties, irrespective of all these dualities. And we discussed the point who is really suffering? So when we talk about all these happiness and distress, who is enjoying or who is suffering? Is this the body who is enjoying or body is suffering, or is the soul is enjoying or suffering? So the point we discussed was, it's like a dream. So this, like when we go to dream, when we go to sleep in the dream, we may experience certain things. And when you come out of the dream, it's all, you think, oh, it was just a dream. So all that feeling is gone away. So same way, whatever experiences we are getting in this life, it's like a dream. So we talked about daydream and night dream. The example of that king having a dream of being a butterfly. So asking, was I really a butterfly? Or I am really a butterfly and now I am dreaming as being a king. So all these various designations we go through, it's like a dream. And how we can come out of the dream, or how we can come out of the sleeping state. So just think about that. When you are in sleep, to get up in the morning, what do you use? Which sense is used to make you get up? Ears, hearing. Everybody puts alarm clock, right? So what is that? Hearing. So we get out of the sleep by a sound. So same way, as we come out of our daily sleep by the sound of the alarm clock, same way how we can come out of this false designation of these various lives, or the sleeping state in these various lifetimes we have been going through, how we can come out of that sleeping state. So again, the sound. And that sound is the chanting of the holy name. So when we chant the holy name, it awakens up our consciousness. To awaken our consciousness, to bring to the real consciousness, I am not this body. I have been going through these various pieces of life, but I am not really this body. And my ultimate destination is with Krishna. So this power of the holy name, the sound power, it can bring the conditioned soul to a spiritual awakening. There is a very nice bhajan, Jiva Jago, Jiva Jago. So, O conditioned soul, please wake up, please wake up. You have been sleeping in the lap of this witch called Maya. So please wake up from this ignorant state. So that's why we always stress on chanting of the holy name. We need to take to this process of the chanting of holy name on a very regular basis. And what is that chanting? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So I hope everybody is participating in this chanting on a regular basis. At least 10-15 minutes on a daily basis. One round, two round. Because that is the only medium in this Kali Yuga to awaken us from this sleeping state. So we discussed this shloka last time. Now we'll move on to the next one.
Yam hi na vyatyantyete purusham purusharashabha samadukha sukham dhiram somritatvaya kalpate.
Anybody would like to recite?
Last time we decided we will recite together.
Okay, or I'll recite, you recite behind me.
Follow,
right?
Yeah.
Yam hi na vyathyante te
Yam hi na vyathyante
Purusham purusharashabha
Purusham purusharashabha
Samadukha sukham dhiram
Samadukha sukham dhiram
So amratatvaya kalpate
So amratatvaya kalpate
Translation?
Read.
Swami, read the translation, please.
O best among men, Arjuna, the person who is not disturbed by happiness and distress, is steady in both, is certainly eligible for liberation.
Okay. So, thank you. So, what is Krishna describing? continuing from text 14, now Krishna is describing the result of if somebody is able to tolerate these dualities, stay equipoised among these dualities, so what is the end result? So one who is not disturbed remains equipoised between happiness and distress. He is eligible for attaining
liberation.
So ultimate goal of life is to attain liberation. And Krishna is describing somebody is able to tolerate these dualities. He is eligible for attaining liberation. So if somebody is equipoised between the happiness and distress. Sama sukha dukham dhiram. So if some dhira, sober person who is able to control all these dualities, not overjoyed when there is some happy moment, and not too much sad if something wrong happens, just remains equipoised, he is eligible for liberation. Now, just think it that way. Sometimes people think, oh, when I'm in distress, it's okay, I can do whatever I want. Or it's okay to do something wrong. Sometimes people try to justify their wrongdoing to their circumstances. Does it happen? So sometimes people do something wrong and they justify it. Oh, I was in this situation, I was in this circumstances, so what can I do? So once I was, it's few years back, I was talking to one colleague and he was describing. So when some riots happen or something, like some people take advantage, they go break down the shops and try to steal the property. And one person was justifying, oh, all these are poor people and they don't have any other means. So they were just trying to take benefit and grab the things, whatever they could. So now, is that justifiable if something is in a particular situation? If somebody is being a poor, does it justify that he can steal? Doesn't justify. So, but what point Krishna is saying here, if somebody is equipoised in whatever situation we are. So for example, let's say you are on a convergence of two roads, on a Y section that leads to two different roads. Do we take the road based on how the road looks like or based on what is our destination? How do you decide your path? Based on, oh, this path looks very nice, very smooth road. On this direction, I saw nice weather forecasting. This road is broken. On this side, it's going to be raining after half an hour. So I better take this side. Do we decide our path based on these circumstances or based on where we really want to go? So for example, you are on a 94 intersection. 75 to 94 intersection. Now it goes to 94 east or 94 west. 94 west may be crowded, packed jam. And you are supposed to go to Chicago, but you decide, oh, it's too much traffic. Let me take 94 east. Is that justifiable? So we decide our path based on what is our destination, not based on how the path is. It's free of crowd or nice smooth roads. So again, another statement, very powerful statement. Our destiny is not formed by the shoes we wear. It is based on the steps we take. I may be wearing a very nice Nike shoes or very branded shoes, but does it matter? Ultimately, it matters is what I do after wearing those shoes. So destiny is not based on what circumstances we are in, but based on what we do in that circumstance. Right now, I may be in some wrong circumstance. I may be suffering with some condition based on some previous work I have done. So reaction is coming now. But the future depends on what we do now in this circumstance. Is it right or wrong? So that's what these verses are focusing on. Don't get attached to what condition you are in now. Do your duty to the best of your ability. Not getting caught up with your circumstances. This temporary happiness or distress. So the next one is Nasato vidyate bhavo na bhavo vidyate satah ubharayapi dushtato nastas to anyastatvadashibhi. So let's do together. Nasato vidyate bhavo.
Nasato vidyate bhavo.
Na bhavo vidyate satah.
Na bhavo vidyate satah.
Ubhayorapi drishtvantas. Tvanyostatvadarshibhi.
Tvanyostatvadarshibhi.
Translation, please.
Those who are seers of the truth have concluded that the non-existent, the material body, there is no endurance and of the eternal, the soul, where there is no change. They have concluded by studying the nature of both.
Okay, thank you. Please keep the book in your lap, not on the ground.
Good job.
Okay. So here further Krishna is describing the comparison between the body and the soul. So all these set of verses, text 12 through text 30, is a comparison, a contrast between the characteristics of the body versus the living entity, the soul. So here Krishna is giving a direct comparison of the body and soul. The body is non-permanent, and for the non-permanent there is no, what is the word used? Endurance?
Non-existent.
For the non-existent, there is no
endurance.
And for the soul, there is no change. So again, Krishna is saying this body is non-permanent. The body doesn't stay permanent. And for the soul is eternal. And for the soul, there is no change. And this is concluded by the seers of truth by studying the nature of both. So the seers of truth, the great saintly people also have concluded this by studying the nature of both, the soul and the body. Now sometimes we get into this, some people get into this debate also that okay, if everything is illusion, this body is illusion, this whole world is an illusion, so why to bother about anything? So this is all, as we say, this is all like dream. So it's all illusion. Why to even worry about that? But does it mean that, okay, there is a pole in front of me. I can just go and hit my head with the pole. There is no point of worrying about anything. It's just all illusion. This pole does not exist. I does not exist. It's ultimately everything illusion. So can I just go run into the pole? So what will happen? As soon as you hit the pole, you will have some sense of pain. So why is that? Because as long as we are even in the dream, whatever you are experiencing in the dream, that also feels very real. Right? And there is a pain and pleasure based on that experience also. So even if in a dream, so you are dreaming that you are running and a lion is chasing you. So in that dream also, even though it's all illusion, but in the dream, it feels all very real. So the lion is chasing, you're running, and you're sweating and high breathing. So all those feelings, all those emotions are still there. So that's why even though everything is like illusion, we are in a dream. But as long as we are in this bodily consciousness or in the bodily, having this body, this material body, so those feelings are still there. So it's not just as an illusion that, okay, I can just do anything, no matter, I can put my hand in the fire or I can hit with the wall. So that is, the feeling will still there. Now, the another point which Krishna is making here, so what is the cause of this illusion?
Yes, you want to say something?
The cause of the losing is what you did in the past.
Okay.
I think so, like, the cause of the illusion that you're in this illusion world, which, like this I'm talking about, like this material world, is because maybe you did something that was not worthy like to attain salvation. You were doing really bad things, so you have to be stuck in this world for another yug.
Okay. So, no, it's okay. Let them sit here.
They have sitting time of 20 minutes is over.
Okay. So, the cause of this illusion is ignorance. And the ignorance is because of our inability to see in connection with Krishna. Right? When we lose the connection with Krishna, that's which is the cause of all the ignorance and all the illusion. So as soon as we connect ourselves back with Krishna through any process, so that illusion start going away. So that's again coming back to the process of chanting. As we connect ourselves back with Krishna through the chanting of the holy name, this illusion state start going away. So next text 17 and text 20, these two texts are very important. Maybe we'll spend more time in these two verses. Avinashi tu tadviddi yena sarvam idam tatam vinasham avyayasya na kaschit kartum arhasi. Avinashi tu tadviddi yena sarvam idam tatam vinasham avyasyasya na kaschit kartum arhati. Anybody want to read translation?
That which pervades the entire body, you should know to be indestructible. No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul.
So again, Krishna is giving the further characteristics of the soul. So that which pervades in the body, you should understand it to be indestructible. And what was the next one?
No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul.
No one is able to destroy that imperishable soul. So two words are used to describe the characteristic of soul. What is that? Avinashi and Vinasham. So what is the difference in Avinashi and Avyaya? Sorry, the Vinasham Avyayasya. So the two words used are Avinashi and Avyaya. Avinashi means indestructible. And Avyaya means imperishable. There is a slight difference. So the difference in Avinashi and Avyaya, one is indestructible means it's not destroyed by itself. And the second word means it's not destroyed by external means. So one is gradually destruction by itself. And other is to destroy something by external means. So now the body has both these. Body deteriorates with time. Right? So slowly we age and it deteriorates, and then so there is birth, growth, byproducts, like developing some byproducts, one give birth to children, and slowly the further growth happens, then dwindles and then dies. So the body has the natural process of deteriorating, and then body can be killed by external means also. If somebody shot some person or with a sword or knife or something. So body can be destroyed externally also by external means, and body itself also deteriorates. But the soul, both these things does not happen. The soul does not deteriorate with time.
it's inexhaustible, imperishable, and it is indestructible. One cannot destroy the soul by external means also. It's not that somebody can shoot the soul or cut the soul into pieces or burn the soul. So that is the difference. Clearly Krishna is mentioning both ways. So that is the difference between body and the soul. And another means is, so generally, something is pervaded by another thing. Like this body, Krishna is saying this body is pervaded by the soul. So when something pervades into something, it either maintains that or it can destroy that. Right? The soul pervades the body, so it maintains the body. So that's why the body is active. One, we can move from one place to another. This body can move from one place to another because of presence of soul. And same way, if something penetrates into the body, pervades into the body, it can destroy that also. Like the bullet pervades into the body and it can destroy the body. Water enters inside the body. If somebody drowns, water pervades the body and it can destroy the body. But soul cannot be pervaded by anything because soul pervades everything. Right? Soul pervades every living entity from small minute ant, a small worm, to the level of a big elephant, to even the level of Brahma. So every small to biggest living entity is pervaded by a, or small to biggest body, creature, is pervaded by a living entity, soul. So soul cannot be pervaded by anything because soul pervades everything. And the consciousness, if we read Prabhupada's purport to this verse, Prabhupada describes about the presence of consciousness. Because of the presence of soul, the consciousness is spread all around the body. And because of the consciousness, we have a sensation of any feeling of pain or pleasure. If somebody pinches you, you will feel some pain. And if somebody is, if you touch a very soft object, so you will feel that pleasure, the softness. So because of the presence of consciousness, and as soon as the soul leaves the body, the person is declared dead. Now after that there is no feeling. If somebody pinches the dead body, does the dead body feel anything? Cry out? No, right? So what is the difference in living entity, living body and dead body? The absence of this consciousness. And the absence of consciousness is due to the absence of soul, because the soul has left the body. So the presence of soul leads to the consciousness throughout the body. And the example given in the purport is, Prabhupada says, as the medicine, when somebody takes the medicine, the effect of medicine is spread throughout the body. If somebody has pain in some part of the body and you take a painkiller, so when you eat the medicine, the effect of that medicine is spread through the bloodstream, right? And the because of that effect, the pleasure or the pain sensation is relieved. So same way, because of the presence of soul, the consciousness is spread throughout the body. Now there is a difference in our consciousness, which is limited, versus the supreme consciousness. So we slightly discussed this point in last session. You asked the question, what is the difference in individual soul versus the supreme soul? The individual soul is sitting in the core of the heart. And along with the individual soul, the super soul is also sitting. Not as the doer, as a witness. So it's described as the two birds sitting on the branch of a tree. So the one bird is doing something. He is eating the fruit of the tree. The second bird is just watching this first bird. So same way, the living entity, who is the owner of this body, he is the doer, he is acting based on his desires. And the super soul, the Supreme Lord, is sitting next to him, just witnessing his activities. And he is present everywhere, in all the different species of life. Our individual soul is very limited in consciousness. We can feel the pain and pleasure of this body only. Whereas the Supreme Soul is conscious of all the living entities. So now I am sitting here. Do you know what is the state of my legs right now? What I am feeling? You cannot feel that, right? Because you are conscious of your own body. I cannot feel what you are feeling right now, and you cannot feel what I am feeling. If your legs are numb, I don't know. If my legs are numb, you will not know. But the Supreme Consciousness is who knows all the living entities. And the Supreme Consciousness, we may know our little past within this lifetime. Okay, 10 years back I did this. And we may know our future plans. Oh, I plan to do this. But the Supreme Consciousness, the Supreme Soul, Super Soul, the Supreme Lord, He knows the past, present and future of all the living entities. So, and there is a verse in Bhagavad Gita later on in another chapter where Krishna described, I know the past, present and future of every living entity, but all the people put together don't know about me. They cannot understand me. So that is the difference in our individual consciousness versus Supreme Consciousness. And in the first few lines of text 13, Prabhupada very clearly described, everybody has an individual soul. Okay, so you should read that first paragraph because we discussed about that point earlier. You had that question. Is this one Supreme Consciousness spreading throughout every different living entities, or is it different souls? So everybody is a different soul. It's an individual soul. It's not that it's just one soul flowing through all the different bodies. It's just a state of consciousness. So everybody is an individual soul, individual living entity. As the individual soul is going in this body from a state of birth to, or from a state to childhood, to youth, to old age, but the individual soul within that body remains the same soul. The soul does not go through any changes of this deterioration, as we are discussing in this verse also. Soul does not deteriorate by itself, and nobody can destroy it, external means also. Now, some people have asked this question in past, previously. When we say the soul is sitting in the heart, so some people ask, okay, we know the soul is there in the body. Where exactly the soul resides in the body? Right? So is the soul in the brain, or is the soul in the heart, or is it in the stomach or in the leg? Where is soul exactly? And Krishna himself answers this question later on in chapter 15 and chapter 18 also. Says, Sarvasya cham hriday shanivashto. I am seated in everybody's heart. And same with the living entity also, the individual soul is also situated in the core of the heart. And then the next question becomes, so in the medical science also, before we go there, so in the medical science also, it says the heart is considered as the source of energy. Right? Because of the heart, the energy is flowing from everywhere. And they attribute it to some particular cell or some particular system in the heart. Because of that, everything is happening. But from this understanding, you know, from where is the energy coming? From where heart is also able to supply energy to the whole body? It is because of the presence of soul. Yes, heart is the source of energy, but heart also is supplying energy because of the presence of soul. Otherwise, when the soul leaves the body, the heart is still there. Why heart stop working? Because heart also has lost its power source. Now another question people ask. So now there are a lot of cases of heart surgery, heart transplant. And soul is situated in the heart. So people say, okay, when the heart transplant happens, does the soul from somebody else's body come into this new body, person's body? Does the soul get transferred from one body to another with the heart transplant? Because soul is situated in the heart. So soul also moves with the heart. What is the answer?
Maybe yes.
Maybe yes? Yeah. Okay. Do you have a car? You drive a car?
Yeah.
And you go to car service? Mm-hmm. So when do you car service? Or let me, if you are changing the seats of the car, do they take you along with the seat and put in a different car? Or what happens? You move out from your seat and they change your seat. So driver remains the same, the seat is changed. Right? So same way, when the heart transplant happens, heart is like a seat. It's not that soul is tied with the heart. Heart is the seat for the soul. Soul is situated in the core of the heart. But with the heart transplant, the seat is being changed. The soul moves out. And then again it takes the new seat. Because soul is not identified just with one organ of the body. Soul identifies with the whole body. And the soul is so attached to the body. So when one organ is changing, it's not that soul identifies with that organ, it goes along with that. No, I'm going with that. So the answer for this heart transplant scenario is, soul just moves over and the heart, the seat is changed. And again, soul takes the seat. Because in the state of anesthesia also, the soul is still there. And there are so many examples of out-of-body experience or near-death experiences where the soul, the living entity, comes back after coming back into consciousness. It describes to the doctor all the experiences, all what he witnessed while that surgery was going on. That, oh, you were doing this, you were talking about this with the other doctor or your assistant, you were discussing this particular thing, and there was a car going by, kids playing outside, football. So he describes all that. So how is that? The soul is still there. It is just moved in a different seat, different position, and just witnessing still everything.
So what about the other soul? So because it's transplanted, right? It came from like some other.
So if the body, let's say heart transplant scenario, generally most of the cases the other person is dead.
Okay.
Right? Mm-hmm. So but the heart is still active for few hours. And that heart is being given to activate it. So that soul has already left.
That soul is gone.
It has already moved out its new destination.
Okay.
The organ is being used, and the soul, this particular person who is getting that organ, the soul takes a new seat.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So is it like it really physically stays there in the heart, or when you say heart, like it just or feeling, or
what is the size of the soul?
Let's discuss in the next verse.
Okay.
It's coming up. Okay. Antavanta ime deha nityasyokta sharirina anashino aprameyasya tasmad yudhyasva bharata. Antavanta ime deha nityasyokta sharirina anashino aprameyasya tasmad yudhyasva bharata. Mataji, anybody will like to read translation?
The material body of the indestructible, immeasurable and eternal living entity is sure to come to an end. Therefore, fight, O descendant of Bharata.
Okay, so again, read again once please.
The material body of the indestructible, immeasurable and eternal living.
Okay. So, three characteristics again further assigned to the soul. One is repeat, indestructible, right? So, Krishna already mentioned that in the previous shloka also. The soul is indestructible. But the material body of the indestructible and the immeasurable and the eternal is sure to come to an end. So the three characteristics assigned to the soul are indestructible, second one is
immeasurable,
third one is
eternal.
So nitya, anashino, aprameyasya. So nitya means eternal. So soul is eternal. Anashino means it's indestructible. And aprameyasya, immeasurable. So now, sometime, people take this immeasurable means soul is huge. It's spread everywhere. It's so huge that it cannot be measured. But, why the soul is immeasurable? Because the size of the soul is described. It's very small, tiny. And in the purport, Prabhupada referred to one shloka from
it's Katha Upanishad or Mundak Upanishad? Amalambra, do you want to read that shloka which is mentioned in the purport, which describes the size of the soul?
Yeah, where is that?
It's 83.
There was some description like cut.
Right. So, no, here, just next page or something.
No, it's before.
It's before, in 17th shloka maybe,
yeah.
In the purport.
83
is the dakho sheshad dike. Oh, this one is it.
Yeah.
Kesha grasata, bhagyasya, This is the explanation.
So the explanation is the size of the soul. What is the size of the soul? You take the tip of the hair, keshasya agra. So take the tip of the hair, split that into
100.
Take one part of that and split it further into 100. That is the size of the soul. So now, is it very absolute dimension or is it just an abstract to give a understanding of the size of the soul? This is a comparison. First of all, because the tip of the soul is very vague criteria. How to take the tip of the soul? So do you take the, if a hair is 100 centimeter, do you take the first centimeter of the hair as a tip? Or is it just the dot, the exact tip of the hair? So you take the tip of the hair, split it into 100, further take one part of that, split it into further 100. So 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair, that is the dimension of the soul. So it's so tiny. And that living entity is sitting, it's the consciousness, because of the presence of that living entity, the soul, the consciousness is spread throughout the body. And why we are not able to see the soul? Is it because of the very tiny size of the soul? Because it's 1/10,000 of the tip of the hair. It may be in some
atomic,
maybe smaller than atomic size. Whatever the atom size we are able to see through microscope or whatever instrument we have, maybe it's even smaller than that. 10^-12. Smaller than a nanoparticle.
Anything you see, you have to get something get reflected.
Right.
But from the soul, nothing can get reflected.
So the reason why we are not able to see the soul, because of the spiritual nature of the soul.
Yes.
Not because of the small size, but because of the spiritual nature. With our material eyes, we are not capable of seeing the spirit soul because of its spiritual nature. Because our eyes can see in a certain range of wavelength. And our ears can hear in certain range of frequency. Our senses are limited. Because of the soul's spiritual nature, we cannot physically see. And sometimes people ask, when the soul leaves the body, can you see the soul leaving the body? How do you know the soul has left the body? There has to be something visible, right? Something the soul has to leave the body. Either some cracks in the body, if the soul is leaving from the head, will there be any crack in the head from where the soul will leave? So soul can leave, so there are 9 openings, 9 gates in the body. You know that? So Krishna will describe in Bhagavad Gita later on, there are 9 gates in the body. There are 2 gates, our 2 eyes. So from where the tears come, you know that there is a very small minute hole there,
opening,
from where the tears come out. There are 2 gates are our ears, 2 gates are our nostrils, then anus and our evacuation system. So there are 9 gates, mouth. And the soul can leave from any of these gates. And there are so many instances, people have exactly seen at the time of death, just when the person dies, a few fraction of seconds before, person's eyes open wide. So it means the soul has left through the eyes. So soul can leave from any. People have done experiment in medical field to exactly see, is there something which leaves the body? We want to see. So they put the body in a glass container, completely locked out, sealed. And they want to see, oh, if there is any crack anywhere to witness the soul has left. Soul is so minute. It can leave from any pores. It doesn't have to break through something. So Krishna is describing further the nature of the soul
is eternal. It does not die. Nobody can destroy the soul. And it is so minute in size. So, now this verse is further also as a direct instruction also. What is the last phase of this verse? Tasmad yudhyasva bharata. Therefore, fight, O Arjuna. Now why Krishna is bringing this now? Now, therefore you should fight. Because Arjuna was hesitant in fighting, thinking, I have to kill my relatives. So Krishna has already described, the body is temporary. And for the soul, there is no death. It's eternal. Nobody can destroy the soul. So you should not fear for anything. So do your duty. So it's like as a direct instruction. Because sometimes if you go to doctor, doctor may describe you many things about as symptoms of your disease. He may talk about your overall health. But then the direct instruction is what to do. Okay, take this medicine. So Krishna is describing about all this nature of soul. To tell about all these various things. And one final discussion. The instruction is, therefore fight. Do your duty. So as a clear direct instruction. Moving on to the next one.
Yainam veti hantaram yaschenam manyate hatam ubhau touna vijanito nayam hanti na hanyate. Yam enam vetati hantaram yaschenam manyate hatam ubhau touna vijanito nayam hanti na hanyate.
Translation, please.
Neither he who thinks the living entity the slayer, nor he who thinks it slaying, is in knowledge. For the self slays nor is slain.
So for the self, it neither slays and it's not slain. So what does it mean? Neither it kills and neither it can be killed. Nayam hanti na hanyate. So now this verse again Krishna is describing Arjuna to encourage him, engage in your duty of fighting because the soul cannot be killed. And don't think yourself to be the killer because soul is not killed. Now the discussion to this point on this particular verse goes to, does it promote whimsical killing? Because it says, okay, soul cannot kill anybody and soul is not killed. So is it okay I can kill anybody? So does it promote whimsical killing? No. So the point here, what Prabhupada also mentioned in the purport, the Vedic philosophy is na hinsayat sarva bhutani. Do not cause any violence to any living entity. Right, that is our principle. Ma himsayat sarva bhutani. So this verse, what it is pointing to is, the soul is not killable. And it is not the killer also. So, while following one's religious principle, while following one's moral of duty, one should not be hesitant to do the duty based on this bodily platform. Thinking that, okay, I will kill something or destroy something. For example, when we are breathing, at that time also, there are a lot of living entities are inhaled. There are in the air, there are so many of living entities. The bacteria and microbes. So they are inhaled and they are killed. So does it mean we should stop breathing? And when we are eating the food, that time also, so many of the microbes, bacteria and everything, they are getting killed during even the process of cooking also, during the process of cleaning your house also. So, while doing your duty, one should execute the duty without the consideration of having the living entity being killed, because the soul is not the killer and the soul is not getting killed. So, one should execute the duty without being concerned about that. So that is the point which Krishna is stressing upon here. Don't consider yourself to be the killer. With the time, they are going to be destroyed anyways. So you do your duty of fighting for the religious principles. So I think we will stop here because the next verse will take a little bit time and we'll discuss in more details maybe next time. I will just recite the verse and we'll continue next time. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuya ajo nitya shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. It's one of the very important verse, very important shlokas, and even maybe everybody should try to memorize. So there are some of the shlokas which are very popular as a from discussion point of view also to describe to somebody also. So we should try to memorize those shlokas. So one of them is this particular shloka 220, another one was 213, and then 222. So I'm just giving you the three shlokas if you can try to memorize, or we can recite this few times so you get familiar with that to memorize this. Na jayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuya ajo nitya shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire na jayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavita va na bhuya ajo nitya shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. Anybody would like to read translation, please?
For the soul, there is neither birth nor death at any point, any time. He has not come into being, does not come into being, and will not come into being. He is unborn, eternal, ever existing, and premeval. He is not slain when the body is slain.
So it's again kind of summary of all the characteristics which Krishna has already given. Soul is eternal, it's indestructible, it does not die when the body dies. It does not come into existence, it will not come into existence, it did not come into existence at any point of time. So what does it mean is, it's not that at certain time, at certain point of time, the soul took birth. Or it takes birth at certain point of time. So it was ever existing, it's eternal. And it does not die when the body dies. Na hanyate hanyamane sharire. So we'll discuss this particular shloka more in details and from a context point of view of the understanding of this principle of soul or reincarnation from other religious point of views. Like from Christianity, from Islam, from Judaism, from Buddhism, from our Vedic culture. So what from various different religious point of view, what is the understanding about the soul and reincarnation principle? So we'll discuss this next time. We'll stop here. Thank you very much. If anybody has any question or comment from whatever verses we discussed. Yes, Prabhu. Right, so the consciousness is spread throughout the body, right? So when the particular organ is cut off, let's say the head of the animal is chopped off, and you see the body is shivering, still like a kind of shaking, right? Because a bit of consciousness is still present. Consciousness, how the consciousness spreads through the stream of the blood. As the effect of medicine spreads throughout the body, through the stream of the blood. Same way consciousness is because of the flow of the blood. And as the circulation stops, after that, after some time, the body becomes quiet. So if you experience, if somebody kills an animal or even a human being, if some organ is cut off, you'll see it is kind of shivering for some time, but then it quiets down because the consciousness effect is there for some period of time because of the continuous flow of the bloodstream.
Momentum.
So basically, soul is not spreading all over the body. So only consciousness, because of the presence of soul.
Yeah. Right. So because of the presence of soul, the consciousness is spread throughout.
Not the soul is spreading.
Not the soul itself is spread throughout the body. Soul is seated in one place. Soul is seated, like there are five different type of airs in the body, right? And the purpose of that body airs is to balance out the air, to lift the soul within the body. Like, I don't recall the exact terminology for all these different five type of airs.
Prana,
right. Yes, so there are five type of air, a lot of you are familiar with that. So, the soul is floating in that five different type of airs. And the five type of airs is balanced to position, the position of the soul. Soul itself is seated at one place in the body, not spread throughout the body. The consciousness is spread throughout the body because of presence of soul.
And the second question is, sorry, I'm just asking because...
Yes, sure, no problem.
So, we say, soul is never born, it's unborn.
Hmm.
So, but in terms, we say Krishna is our Supreme God and we are the children of Krishna and we are part and parcel of Krishna. If soul is not born, how Krishna become our father?
So, everything exists eternally. So, when we say soul has not taken birth, means it is not possible to trace the history of the soul, that at what point of time the soul came into existence. So, we can trace the history of this body. It's okay, right now I'm, let's say, 30 year, 40 year old. So we can trace the history of this body, whatever activities are related with the body. That okay, when I was 10 year old, I did this thing. Or when I was 20 year, I used to go to this college. So all that history is related with the body, this particular body. But for the soul, you cannot trace out the history of the soul. At what point of time the soul came into existence. So that's why we say, okay, soul is eternal. Never at any point of time we can trace back the history of soul to put a tag that okay, in 1947, 1949, this soul came into existence.
Yeah, we can't trace, but Krishna can.
Right. So from our point of view, that's why I say it's a theory of relativity. Infinity, if you take out infinity out of infinity, it still remains infinity. If you divide infinity with infinity, answer is still infinity. Right? So that's why there is no time period as a tag we can put on when the soul came into existence. From the eternity point of view.
And we say part and parcel of Krishna. So Krishna is a supreme soul.
So Krishna is a supreme soul. So in Ishopanishad there is one very nice shloka as a invocation mantra itself. And Purnamidam. Right? So the Supreme is complete in itself, and from the Supreme Whole, all various whole units, complete units have come out. Still the Supreme remains complete. So from the Supreme, all the living entities come from Krishna. That's why I say we are part and parcel of Krishna. But we existed in the complete for eternity. It's not that the Supreme Consciousness has cut into pieces. And then the individual souls have been created. The Supreme is complete and all the living entities were there with the Supreme. For eternity. Because if we say, okay, the Supreme Consciousness or the Supreme Soul can be cut into pieces. Now we have become small, small individual souls. Then it fails the theory which Krishna says soul cannot be cut into pieces. Right? So the individual soul remains forever with Krishna, and we are considered as part and parcel of Krishna. We are Jivera Savrupa, Krishna and Nityadas. Our original Savrupa is to be in the serving position to Krishna. Thank you, nice questions. Any other questions or comments? Any other comment, bro?
Just a comment, actually.
the soul is said to be on the seated at the place of the heart. It's not actually inside the heart, but it's on the position of
the position of the heart also. Yeah, that's true. It says in the core of the heart. So it's not exactly, doesn't necessarily means to be inside the heart. It is in the core of the heart. So it's in the vicinity of the heart. Any other comment, question? Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srimad Bhagavad Gita ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. So today is Ekadashi, and actually every week we should be doing one round of chanting together. So today we'll do one round chanting. So it gives us opportunity to do in a group and become more familiar with the process of chanting. The beads are here. Maybe if somebody can maybe pass out the beads.